You're listening to Big Blend Radio's English Connection Show with Glenn Burrows, owner of Norfolk Tours. Hey, everybody. So excited to talk about artisans today in England. So if you're going on a journey to England, an adventure, why not take in the local arts and crafts? And it could be someone who's making jams and preserves, someone who's making chairs. There's a name for that, or chair legs. Glenn will tell us about that. But it could be a distillery. It could be glass blowing, which is so amazing. Glass blowing is like a whole art form that is just mesmerizing. But welcome back, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks. I've just had one of my granddaughters today babysitting. So she's had a lovely day. So have I.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, going to something like glass blowing for kids has got to be, you just, your eyes are wide open. Like, how does this happen? You know?
Yeah. I mean,
and then
children,
so hot.
Children, obviously, in a glass blowing factory, you have to really keep an eye on children. So it's not really the sort of thing to take toddlers to. But, you know, slightly older children, you know, 10, 11, 12, they would be fascinated by it. You know, it's fascinating. It fascinates children of my age, so it must fascinate them children as well. You
well,
know.
Glass art. Here we have Chihui. He's an artist, very famous with all these huge glass sculptures, and he has gardens and things like that. And then when we lived in Mexico, there's a lot of glass blowers, which are doing very clear little hummingbirds and things that you can hang in your car, like little things. And like little clowns, and then they do little colored eyes and things with glass, and so but it's so intricate, and yet then you get to the things like these big glass bowls and things like that, that I'm like, okay, you know, so that's, it's amazing. And so you still have that going on, which is great.
I mean, and the ability to make something suddenly appear but before your eyes out of just a little blob of glass, you know, a blob of molten glass. And then all of a sudden you can suddenly see that you've got a rabbit in front of you, or a hedgehog, or suddenly this blob of glass is turning into a bowl, or, you know, it's just amazing.
And
and
all
it
the
takes
colors.
Years. I mean, colors, the way they add the colors, you wouldn't imagine would actually do what you expect it to do, because it's just sort of like little tiny shards of glass and of chemicals, and it changes the color of the glass. It's just totally amazing.
I have a friend who makes glass beads and does glass jewelry, and I'm allergic to metal. And
Right.
so, and I used to make jewelry. I used to be like a bead and metal worker, even though
Okay.
I'm allergic to it, but I can't wear it. And for years, I mean, I think almost half majority of the podcast people have seen on YouTube with us, I'm wearing this one necklace that I've worn for over 20 years, but it finally broke. It just had enough. I mean, it's been on the road. It's been like used daily. It was like my good luck charm. And it's glass blown blue, and it was beautiful. And I still have it all, because I'm going to have to string it back all together. And even the beads for the necklace, because nothing had, no metal. And it was actually of a button at the back, but it's all glass, like frosted red glass beads. And so to me, it was always special. But I used to watch her sit there, and I could watch this all day long. You know, she would actually do this in a crock pot and melt the glass together, like you're saying. She'd just go, let's just add this one. And then you get the swirly. It's like you're making marble bread or marble cake, you know, but it's glass. And it's all these beads are just, ooh, I love it. I absolutely love it. And in the day of AI trying to take over the arts, and the day of nonstop multi-manufacturing, I think it's important that we go back to some of these arts and crafts. And that's something, as a child living in England, I remember very well the arts and crafts part of England, that as a kid, like I say, mesmerized, I mean it. It was just meant the world to me to be able to go, like, I remember in Scotland going where they had the sheep, the long-haired sheepy, like, I don't remember, Angora? No, that's South Africa. Angora, anyway, these long-haired sheep, and then you could see them, you know, spin the wool right there and then make a jersey, as you would say. a sweater over here. And you're like, wow, you know. And then when you go to a store now, like if you go to a big box store and you see sweaters, you don't have that same feeling, you know.
No. I mean, there is nothing better than to go to somewhere like I went to this Langham glass factory. I actually saw the man, the bloke with the shorts on in behind me just here. I mean, he was blowing the glass and making it into a little rabbit. And then afterwards, we went into the shop area and there were these little glass rabbits that he made. And they are just amazing. I've sent the photos and, you know, put them on the website. And their sort of apprenticeship is about 7 years. You know, the young lady who's standing beside him, if I can, that young lady there, she's only been there for about a year and a half. And she was the one who was given the talk to explain what everybody was doing. And she was just doing the little bits, you know, the handing him bits and the, you know, she did actually show us how not to blow glass, which was really fascinating because you automatically think it's like blowing up a balloon. You know, you have to keep blowing and keep blowing, but you just need to put a little bit of air in. And then when you heat it up, obviously the glass expands. And that's what she was explaining. She said, if you put in a right big lung full of air, this is what happens. And then you could see what happened. It went just completely out of control, you know, like a great big bubble. And it is totally amazing.
Well,
and to
I
be
want
able
people
to have a go, to be able to have a go at it. And I've got it here.
Oh, you did a Christmas ornament, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I've got it.
And I want to tell everyone that you've got an article. Everyone is linked in the show notes with Glenn's photos, and it's up on blendradioandtv.com. So that is your creation.
Yeah, I actually blew that. I had
some
help.
Amazing, Glenn.
Yeah. The man, actually the bloke who's sitting behind me on the bench there, he actually blew it into a mold, and he finished it off. You put a little thing at the top to tie the ribbon onto. But yeah, I blew my own Christmas bauble.
So for the tree, on the Christmas tree, I imagine you don't want one of those cats that get in the tree and take the tree down when you've got a special ornament
Diane,
like that.
Diane said it might be a bit heavy for one of our Christmas trees, so we might just have it hanging on something else. But, you know, it's something that I've made. What souvenir, you know?
Well, that was talking about souvenirs, like we're talking right before Christmas, you know, and you've got to think, you know, as we travel and people, we have ornaments and stuff, and we really can't take ornaments as we travel.
No.
But people have ornaments on their tree, Christmas ornaments, that are from their travels, from places, and it means something. So it's so special to them as memories.
Yes.
That we often forget to talk about this. I know people go to the Christmas markets, and from what I hear, England does really well with Christmas markets and things
Yes,
too.
They do.
And so if you go there and you come home and you have a tree or even a small tree, or you hang them up or on something, you know, like you're saying, this creates this whole other feeling of, you know, festivities, of memories, and gives family something to talk about.
Exactly. I mean, when my friends came, or my cousins came over from Canada, at one time they bought me a pewter Canadian maple leaf that had been made by a local pewter worker, you know, and that's lovely. And that goes on our Christmas tree. Our son, whenever he goes on holiday, he always buys a Christmas decoration. Wherever he goes, he buys a Christmas decoration, and that goes on the tree, you know. And my daughter, every year she buys a different Christmas ball for the children, and that goes on the tree, you know. I've actually got what we call Santa. We call him Father Christmas in England. And I've actually got a little water boat, you know, a Wellington boat that stands stands about that tall. And I've had that since I can remember. And that always comes out every Christmas, and I can still see it in my mind standing on top of our television when I was a child, you know, because that That's my Father Christmas's boot. So having things like that are family things, aren't they? You know, when my children come over, they say, "Oh, Dad, you got your Father Christmas boot out again." You know, but they know that that is my Father Christmas boot, and that has to come out every Christmas. You know, yeah. So these things, and like you say, if when you go on holiday, you get the chance to actually make a Christmas bauble or anything else, it's just something that you've got. You know, a lot of places, a part in.
As you know, we pet sit as we travel, and you know, in people's homes, and a lot of people, they're travelers. And people have like sometimes a room that is dedicated to their travels. And these things, you know, you're not taking sometimes not huge things unless you ship them, you know, because you've got to go through, you know, TSA and be able to fly.
Yeah, of course.
But there's these special little things. And maybe it's a rug that has been shipped or something like that, or a cloth. Yeah. Like, actually, you know, Nancy and I really pared everything basically down to, we have photos and writing and art and basically that's it in our storage unit. But some of the things that we've kept and is actually wrapping our paintings are our cloths from Kenya, because the Kenyan cloth that the Africans created with their different patterns and designs and some of the jewelry all tell stories according to color.
Yep.
And so for us, that is part of, and you can still smell Kenya. I know this sounds weird, but I can smell Kenya. It's weird. I know we talk about smell, but like
smell is so evocative.
The
thing is, if you buy something that either you've seen made or you've seen the person who makes it, then you've got an automatic connection to it, and you know that it's made where you were. Rather than, I mean, I put in the story, you know, when we were in the east coast of Canada, we went to Prince Edward Island and we went to Halifax in Nova Scotia. And both of those places, we were able to buy things that were made in them places. There was an artisan potter who we were able to get a little butter dish, which is a beautiful little butter dish with a cover on it. Lovely. And in Nova Scotia, we were able to get a teapot stand with the I can't remember the name of the lighthouse, but it's the lighthouse outside Nova Scotia, Halifax. And that was made by a local potter, which was lovely, you know. But when we went to Niagara, we couldn't find anything made locally. They were all made in China. Everything I tipped up to see where it was made. So we didn't buy anything. You know, what's the good of buying something with, you know, a holiday thing
made in China, made in Taiwan?
So we didn't get anything. Whereas these other things, they actually remind us of where we were, because we remember looking around the artist's studios actually to buy these things. They may have been a bit more expensive, but they were made locally.
Well, what about, because I remember when the Queen passed away, and there were souvenir shops. Some of them had turned into museums almost because they've had collections for years, right? And not just for the Queen, but the royal family. So finding something that represents the royal family without it being mass produced, is that hard to find these days?
Again, you have to really look. While I was at Langham Glass, at this glass factory, I'll have to send them a bill because I keep mentioning them, you know. But when I was there, they had actually made some commemorative glassware for the passing of the Queen and for the coronation. So you can find locally made coronation souvenirs, you know, different. I mean, they make specific things for people's weddings. One thing I loved was a great big charger, you know, a great big glass plate that what people can do is they have a special pen that they sign on the edge of the plate, and then their glass engravers will engrave the signatures onto the glass dish. So that's a really unique wedding present. You know,
I love that.
Your guests have signed, you know, fantastic.
People have signed, and it's personal. It's something you're going to keep. you know, we were in Asheville, you know, Steve and Karen from the Lion and the Rose Bed and Breakfast. See, that's British. It's very British, right?
The Lion and the
Actually, it
Rose.
was named after a pub. It was named after a British pub. So just saying. We went to a distillery, and I know we're going to talk about that because artisan things are, you mentioned chutney in your article. And once I hear about fruit chutney, I go berserk. I haven't had fruit chutney. Now our friends brought us Marmite, and you know, I love my Marmite. And now I'm going to tell Melissa when I see her again, I want chutney, good chutney. But, anyway, going back to, we went to a distillery, Two Trees Distilling in Asheville, and they do this process where they work with other distillers across the country using the same oak, and then they toast it according to the flavor. So you don't keep chopping down trees because bourbon and things are made with this American white oak.
Yeah.
And their process is incredible, but it's geeky that I don't understand, but they're not going to give their trade secret either. But it was really amazing. But they started now a new process of engraving bottles. So that when you buy a bottle, you can bring it back and have them engrave it or engrave a bottle that, you know, beforehand so that you're not wasting a bottle. You have something personalized as a gift for someone, which I think is pretty amazing for businesses too. Like if you get a gift from a business and it was something artisan crafted instead of that typical chain letter, like seriously, you know, it's been processed, mass produced, and you get your insurance companies tend to be the ones to do it over here.
Well, there was a charity, talking about the distillery, there was a charity that went to them for a morning experience. And it was the helicopter air ambulance, because in our country, we have helicopter air ambulances who go out to pick up people if they're, you know, if they're falling off a cliff or something, you know. And none of them are actually supported by the government.
Really?
So they're all charities. So this particular one, the East Anglian Air Ambulance, went to the distillery for a morning as an experience, but they also designed their own gin. And they actually call it the Whirlybird Gin.
And now I like that one. That's good.
In the 1960s, there was a program called the Whirlybirds, which I used to watch. It was all about the helicopter rescue people. So they've called this the Whirlybird Gin, and it was designed by the members of the East Anglian Air Ambulance. So how cool was that? You know, you can buy this gin that was actually designed by the helicopter people. That's brilliant.
That is awesome. You know, you've been on the show with Peggy Fiandaca.
Yes.
The LDV Winery in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah.
Well, they have classes where you go and learn how to blend wine and you make your own. They're like, here's this wine. Let's put it together and see if you like it or not. And we've tasted their blends and their everything that's a blend rocks, right? We know that we love the big blend because it's this personalized touch where you actually start to learn, you know, just like you were able to do, you know, your own Christmas ornament in the glass place, you know, you can say their name again. That's all right. But
Langham Glass.
Yes, everybody, bring that money in. but you know, I think that is so special when you're able to see something and do it. And it also keeps folk art alive.
Yes.
The folk crafts, you know, things, these are all functional items, you know, that we're kind of talking about.
Yeah. I mean, look,
the stuff from the distillery might not help functionality, but you know.
Well, yeah, it does actually. although I've shown the Christmas decoration, one of the party who I took there the other week actually made his own whiskey glass, you know, so there are functional things, but also, you know, like I said, you know, they are also on the video I sent you, he was making a fruit bowl, you know, so they make glasses, they make fruit bowls, they make decanters, they make all that sort of stuff, you know, so, and you do pet sitting. What one of my friends did when she lost her dog, she actually had a word with these people at Langham Glass, and they they were able to put the cremated remains of her pet into a model of the dog. So it one of those great big Norwegian dogs. And they made one of this, you know, they made a glass Norwegian dog, and they incorporated some of the dog's ashes in with the glass. So she, not
that
only
awesome.
has she got a beautiful reminder of the dog, because it's a Norwegian dog. That's one of these black ones. I can't think what they're called.
Oh, the Newfoundland. No,
Newfoundland,
that's
not
is it?
Norwegian. Yeah, Newfoundland.
Newfoundland.
And
They're
not only
beautiful.
that, but actually he is part of it, because part of his ashes are actually in the glass.
He got reheated. Yeah, it's special.
That is so special.
It is. And, you know, I think because you look at the dog and it's a beautiful dog, whereas back in the day, people used to stuff their cats back into like a thing. You know what I'm talking about? Like you'd go sit in someone's house and you see a cat and you automatically go to pet it. And then you realize it's a stuffed cat. And you're like, what? And then people do that and you can go, no, that's a little, I'm not, I know that that's a craft, taxidermy and all that, but that's a little weird to have your animal stuffed. And I've
Well, I
seen
don't know.
people do it where they're sitting on, they have the animal stuffed and as though they're sleeping on the couch or
Yeah,
like a
but I
chair
mean,
that they normally in. No.
didn't Roy Rogers have Trigger stuffed?
I think so. Yes. I do believe
Pretty
so. In a
certainly did.
hotel thing at the one hotel, Nancy, I think, as I recall, had has stayed there. I think it was part of her honeymoon, actually. Ooh, gossip. She's not here. Let's gossip. But she's been there and seen it. I do believe so. Yes. But it's a little different than you go to sit down next to a cat and you think it's, you know, and it, I mean, if it started purring, that would be weird. But
Well,
you know, but
it
people do
knows.
what they. But it's. I think people should do, as long as you're not hurting anything, do what makes you happy.
Whatever you're
Yeah.
comfortable with. I mean, some people would think that having your pet's ashes incorporated into a model is a bit,
I don't
but
think, I think that's awesome. That's, and
I
it's a
think
way of,
that's
it's
it's
not
different.
toxic. It's not toxic to the environment because we're also looking at how people are, how we, you know, we end life and then where do our remains go? How many places can we have burials? Is cremation good for the earth? What can we, that's a whole other show. And we will be having that, by the way. I don't know if Glenn wants to join us on that one, but it's a whole interesting thing
Who
about
knows? Who
who
knows what's
knows?
going to happen?
But these artistic things that are personal and the fact that they can take commissions and even maybe you do it like, you're talking about the dogs. So a lot of people have been able to take their dog prints and they put them into, you know, like a piece of pottery with their dog paw prints in them. Things like that. I've seen that with pottery.
I mean, they do that. They've done that with glass as well. So you can get like
Wow.
a glass tile with a child's handprint in it.
Yeah,
So
that's
I
awesome.
mean, these people are craftsmen, and they will talk to you about anything you want to talk to them about, you know. So if you've got an idea, they can either say it would work or it wouldn't work, you know.
Well,
And that's
yeah.
like the distillery, you know. You might think to yourself, oh, I fancy a glass of gin that tastes of cheese
The
and
mountain.
a cheese
Ooh.
scone, you know. So
Oh.
you might say to them, can I make a gin that tastes like a cheese scone? And they might say no, you know. But
Or
at
we
least,
can have one that pairs well, you know.
exactly. They would know what goes and what doesn't go.
Well, in your article, I thought you brought up one very crucial and important point, and that is how these artisans actually to be, and we talk about this about small business. We have to be up together to help each other in this world of big domination of monopolies and the giants and the billionaires. But it's the same with artisans, you know, that I know that, like I told my friend with the jewelry, like, you know, we did things together musically and things like that. And yet she'd get her beads. Some of the beads she doesn't make, she'll get from a friend who does make those beads. And so, or somebody who does the leather work that she'll incorporate into a piece. So she'll go to her friend with that, not Taiwan or China. I don't know which one to say anymore. China, I don't
Whichever.
care. Whichever, it doesn't matter, right? But she would go get that from them. So together they were supporting each other, even if it's not like hugely financial, but the integrity to the craft and for the person purchasing something was there that you have something special that you can't find in a big box store,
But
period.
also
And it
in a way,
lasts long.
by them working together, they also double their market, because with the example I gave, where the gin maker uses fruit from a local fruit merchant, you know, someone who grows fruit, and then afterwards, after they've steeped it, then the fruit then goes to a jam maker or a chutney maker, and they then make chutney or jam, which is already infused with alcohol. So not only is the gin distillery selling that to their customers, the jam maker is selling the product to their people, and also the fruit provider is also selling the property, not the, the product to their customers. And they're talking about the other businesses that are all involved in the process. So not only are you helping each other, but you're also enlarging your market, because all of these other people are going to start talking about your business. So, you know, it just makes sense.
Well, Glenn, everyone's been talking about our business. Okay. I'm just kidding. But it's really true. It's about working together. And then when you, as a tour guide, take people to have an authentic British experience, and then they can actually see this process of how everything, they're getting a true taste of that region, whether it's the gin, exactly, the jam, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And also there's a camaraderie that makes you feel very welcoming into a place when people are working together instead of fighting.
Yes.
You feel as a visitor, and, you know.
And we're not in competition. You know, I'm not in competition with the distillery. I'm not in competition with the glass blowers. You know,
you're a good promoter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and, I haven't mentioned the distillery. Black Shuck is the name of the distillery.
I like that. It's a good name for a dog.
Yeah, but dude, Black Shuck is one of the stories that I think I may have covered on one of our ghosts.
Oh, yes, stories. The black dog.
He was the big black dog who was on the North Norfolk coast, and he used to haunt places. And if you ever saw him, you would die, you know, so you don't want to see
him. Well, it makes sense, because you're talking about spirits, so this makes sense, you know.
Yeah, but they've called their gin and their other, their company is called the Black Shuck Distillery. So, you know,
I love it.
It's all local, you know.
Mm. Langham, now, what about Langham the textiles?
I'll tell you that in a minute. Let me just tell you about Langham Glass. Langham Glass is the name of a village where they used to be, but now they're in a town called Fakenham. And, you know, the Black Shuck Distillery is also in Fakenham, and that's named after this really ancient old dog, you know, this goose. So, you know, it's all local stuff.
This is all like the dog village. The village of the dogs. Dog spirits. This is, you can't go wrong with that. You know, we love that. So
exactly.
And Fakenham, I thought, oh, you're faking them. You know,
Fakenham is the name of the town.
Okay. So now the textile crafts, like I was saying, that was something that was amazing to me. And even to the point of, like, in Scotland, how people make kilts. This is something. I don't want to leave that out, because that's a craft, and it goes into having the right colors and the right tartan, right? Yeah. The actual design. So it's like important, like here in the States, I don't know if this happens in England, quilts are done in like a message, or it could be how long you've been married, that they do this kind of design.
Yes.
What
my daughter actually had done by a local needle person was that she provided the information. So the my granddaughter's name, and this has been done for all of them, so, you know, so the granddaughter's name, her date of birth, her weight at birth, and also she provided a load of old clothes from her birth up to when she was one. So, you know, the little bibs and little sleep suits and the little cardigans and whatever, you know, night dresses, anything. And then what the needlewoman does is she makes a stuffed animal. One of my granddaughters has got an elephant, I think. Another one has got a teddy bear. And I can't think what the other one's got. I can't remember. But what it is, then on the feet of the animal, it's got the date of birth, the name and the weight, And also the actual toy weighs the same as the baby did when they were born.
Wow.
And it's completely made up of a patchwork of their first years of clothes. So it is so personal, because all of these little patches on the elephant, for instance, that was her first bib, that was her first growing suit, that was
wow.
a pair of, you know. So it's so personal. And again, it's made by a local seamstress.
And it's usable, it's functional.
Well, yeah, it sits on a shelf, but it's a fantastic toy, if you want to call it a toy, but it's a fantastic reminder.
It's a keepsake. Yeah.
Yeah, of the baby's first year, you know.
Wow.
It's just amazing.
That's a cool
the
idea.
Sorts of things that these people can do.
I just think we need this more than we realize. And I think as we get more into AI and AI goes into the arts, like nowadays, somebody pick up a guitar and sing. It does happen. It does occur. Definitely.
Yes.
I know from our shows, but
yes,
you know, I feel like going back to this is going to become a crucial need. It's going to become a need, not just a, oh, how cute. It's going to be, oh, we need to remember that we do have these skills,
yes,
and AI can't, you know, we'll copy some of them, right? It's what we input, and it's not all bad, but to be able to see someone actually handcraft with precision and dedication and with creativity is massive. It's so important. AI will not exist without us providing the creativity.
No, you cannot put together the human aspect of things. And that's what it's all about. I mean, we were talking before the program about smocking. I've got a lady I know who actually does smocking.
Not so snogging, smocking.
No, not snogging, smocking, smocking. And what smocking is, you need to look it up. It's the way that material is all bunched together and then sewn up. So it makes it slightly elastic, but it's not got elastic in it. It's
actually,
the way
some
it's
shoes have that on the on
Sorry?
the. Some shoes actually have it, like slip-ons, so that you can stay stretched with your feet. There's slippers.
Probably, I don't know. But smocking is a really, really old way of sewing garments, and it used to be used for shepherds. You know, the great big shepherd smock. Which is just a, it's like a dress, actually. The shepherd's smock is like a dress, and it's always got smocking down the center, so as you could pull it over your head. You know? And that
I
would
need that for my waist.
that would also be a way to introduce a pattern. And that's like knitting, you know, knitting is such a massive skill.
Oh, wow.
And years ago, the fishermen used to have their own jumpers that were knitted by either them or their wives or whoever. Because the fishermen used to knit. The men used to knit. Because obviously in between the times of putting the nets out and bringing the nets in, they didn't have anything to do, hardly. So they would knit. And they would have a particular pattern on their jumper. So everyone would have their own pattern on their jumper. And a lot of that was to do with the fact that they would then be able to identify the body if he drowned, because they would know his jumper.
Wow.
You know? They would
wow.
know
And the name on it. I remember we used to actually even embroider
his, it wouldn't be his
our
name.
names.
No, it wouldn't be his name. Mm-hmm. It would be the pattern,
wow.
you know? So wow. All of these things have a reason. Yeah. You know, that's amazing. All these skills that we used to have that are dying out, although they're coming back, you know, we have people who now do these things.
Well, names used to be a big deal. I remember when I was in boarding school, you'd have your name on things because of the laundry, you know.
Yeah, of course.
But we got into having pens that were waterproof and stuff. But
Yeah,
before that, they weren't. You in the back, they would embroider your name on the inside of, you know, the jackets and things like that. So I think that was a skill from a long time ago. But I think about, you know, the knitting and crocheting and things like that, and even tatting.
Yes.
Tatting, lace tatting is amazing to
Yes.
just so delicate, you know. And I actually have friends that it's how you stop smoking. if you're used to using your hands, you knit or crochet. So I know a lot of men who knit and crochet so they don't smoke a cigarette.
All right, okay.
Yeah, because it
You
keeps your
know.
hand busy. And it was a
Yeah.
hand, like a hand action that you, it was part of getting past it was stay busy. And so that's
Yeah.
what they did. And it works. But it's interesting too, because I don't know if you have that over in England. You've got to. I think you called it macrame for you, and
Oh
we
yeah.
call it macrame.
Yeah, my
Macrame, and it's we'd make like hangers for your plants. I used to make jewelry by doing it.
Yes, just with bits of string.
Yeah.
Yes.
All of that is an art, and you're using something, and you can use, you could use anything just like regular rope and create something beautiful out of it that's
Yes.
functional, you
Yes.
know?
I mean, but
So.
even rope. When we were on holiday up in Derbyshire a few years ago, we actually saw how rope was made. You don't think about how rope is made, because rope, you know, is not a simple thing. You know, rope is made in a very complicated way, and to actually see it being made is something really special. And then
It is.
you can make things out of rope. I mean, there's one, you know, on the side of a ship, they now have these big plastic balls, for want of a better word, that to stop the boat from hitting the quayside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, years ago, they used to be made out of rope. You know, you would make a big ball out of rope. Well, now you can actually buy them as a decorative item, which is just a ball made of rope. And
Oh.
it's how it's all put together, how it's all tied together into a ball. It's just amazing. You know,
Well, all of this is so
simple
important.
things. Simple, but very complicated to do.
Well, it's just like even your dishes, your plates, if you go to a local potter and your cups are not the same size as, you know, who's got the bigger one? Because this one's a little wonky compared to that. But I love that. When you have a
Yes,
cup of
exactly.
coffee made out of something that someone did by hand, there's
Yep.
nothing like that. Your coffee changes because it's, I don't know, it's more back to the earth too, because it's not something mass produced. Now, you talked about this bodger.
A bodger, yeah, he makes chair legs. And we were in a
I had no idea that this was an actual thing. I thought
yeah.
like a furniture person did all of it. So the
No,
chair
I mean,
maker.
years ago, don't forget, years ago, people had their own chairs that they sat in, you know, farmhouse chairs. And what would happen if you broke a chair leg?
You go
So
to the chair person.
you needed a spare chair leg. So
Okay.
you would wait until the bodger came round and he would make you a new chair leg, because you
Off of
wouldn't.
what we already have and kind of
No,
formulate.
a new piece of wood. He would make it
But
literally.
and what I
Piece.
mean is like use the same design so that it
Yeah,
matches the
so
rest.
it would match and it would be the same size. Because years ago, if you broke something, you didn't throw it out. You know, you
Oh, well,
may use.
that what are you talking about, Glenn? Now, I
Yeah,
don't think
exactly.
anybody understands that concept anymore.
No, you had to make do and mend. So everything was mended years ago. So if you had a hole in your socks, your grandmother or your mother would darn them up with a
What would
needle.
you say if I think I don't think I have a pair of socks that I haven't had my big toe go through?
Well, there
They're
you go. But
all
now,
get snowy.
nowadays, what do you do with them nowadays? You chuck them out and buy a new pair. But years
Use them
ago,
as rags.
years ago, you didn't do that. You darned the socks, you know. And that's the same as a chair. If you broke a chair leg, you went to the bodger, or they waited until the bodger came round and he would make you a new chair leg. And
However, things were made better back then too. Like your socks were probably socks that would last a lot longer than some, you know what I mean? It's like you go to your local big box store,
yes.
you're going to get your 99 cents. I don't know if there's 99 cent socks. I don't know. That sounds a little cheap, but whatever. You
You
buy your
know.
cheap socks in the bag. Here's your $24, whatever, $10, whatever it is. How long do those socks really last? Not long.
No.
And then the people who can't afford the expensive socks end up doing the cheaper socks and then running through the, because they really need the socks more and they go through them quicker because they
Yes.
don't have the money for that, but then they end up spending double. See, that's
Well,
what happens in this world.
my grandmother used to knit socks on four
Wow.
needle, on a square of four needles.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
So she didn't,
Wow.
they didn't, she did, she didn't have a seam. She just made them circular. And, you know, she always used to knit socks. She used to knit all the time. You know,
I think I should start doing
I would
that.
imagine, I can't remember whether I have still got a pair up in my wardrobe that my nanny knitted for me, but I had them for years.
Well, little booties for babies were always a special deal.
But
The
Diane
first booties.
always knitted the baby's booties. Diane loves knitting. Whenever there's a new baby, she always knits a great big pram cover. So
Oh,
it's
wow.
to put on the pram, you know, for the baby, a big knitted shawl she does, you know, to go around the baby when it's newborn. She loves knitting. She's always
Well,
done lots
knitting
of
is great. I love it. I think it's so good, you know. I think all of these crafts will, I think they are coming back. How is it? Do you have, like here, like you'll have a farmer's market or a street festival and
Yes.
people come out, or do you have those over there,
We
those
do.
markets?
We do have them markets, but the trouble is, again, you even when you go to the farmers markets, you still have to be careful that you're not talking to somebody who goes to every farmers market and actually gets them out of a supermarket. Because, you know, we have a lot of agricultural shows, for instance, and some people just go to agricultural shows. You know, they have their own stall, but they don't actually make anything. They just buy everything in from China or wherever, and they take it to an agricultural show. So a lot of things you do have to be careful, but there are still a lot of people who make things by hand.
That's
And
nice.
you're talking to the person who's made it. You know,
You know what?
That is.
I've met a person, I actually got a film. I should actually put this together. She showed us how she makes brooms.
Yeah.
And you know, think about it. Now, you know, it was a craft because of how you tied the actual straw or whatever you're using
The
and the
sticks, yeah.
actual wood. Yeah, the actual, and how they wove things together. And she, that was a huge thing. And I was like, oh yeah, I was just used to buying plastic stuff out of the store, right?
There you go. But it's
Yeah.
amazing. What I mean, it's like the other person I've got pictures on there is the jeweler. You
Oh,
know,
yes. Oh.
a friend of mine actually makes jewelry. You know, he made his wife's engagement ring. You know,
Good.
he made excuse me, he made a lovely necklace for Zoe from Edmund, and also when my granddaughters were born, my mum wanted them all to have a bangle with their birthstone in.
Oh, nice.
And he made them each their own individual bangle with their birthstone in, you know.
Oh.
So, and so, you know, you get these things, and that, you know, they're made by somebody, you know.
And they're your special treasures. Those are the things, your
Exactly.
little special treasures. How
They're
can
not
you
something
treasure
that.
mass production, you know?
Exactly. They're not something that you've just gone to a jeweler's shop on the high street and just bought off the shelf. You've told him what you want and he's made it,
Ah,
you know,
that's cool.
from scratch.
That's cool. And people will ship if, you know, you're overseas, you know, people will ship for you, which is a
They
good
do.
idea to do. And
Yeah,
you
he
can buy
does.
insurance and things like that. So,
He,
you know.
funnily enough, he, one of my ladies who came over with me, it was just several years ago now, she wanted to find a lion gold charm to make into a necklace, and he didn't actually have one in the shop at the time, but he got one in, and he put it together for her and sent it off
Wow.
to her, you know.
Wow.
So again, that's what you get from a local craftsman, is they will do something specific for you, you know. And that,
Yeah.
you don't, if you go to a high street jeweler or a high street anything, and you ask them for something they haven't got on the shelf, they will say, we haven't got one. You
Yeah.
go to an artisan or a craftsman and say, I would like one of these, and he will stand there with a piece of paper and a pencil, and he will draw it for you and say, is this what you want? Because I can make it for you. And
That's
that is
awesome.
the difference.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And let's not leave out bakers and, you know, bakeries
Yeah,
and oh,
food.
that's
I mean,
all.
food is a different thing altogether,
I
isn't it?
know, but you know, but that is a craft, you know.
Of course it
I
is.
remember in South Africa when we lived out there and we went to Cape Town and the Green Market Square, And all these artisans comes and musicians, and it was just, that's why I wanted to move there, just because of this. It's crazy. Weird things happen to you, just like that, something like that. There's people with flowers and plants, but there was a hat maker, the haberdashery dude, you know, and I went berserk. They were making top hats. And back in when I used to perform and do music, I used to wear this top hat, and you're going to love this. It had a keyhole. It was a blue, like royal blue top hat, and it had a keyhole. I still have the keyhole. It's in my storage unit at the front, like a door keyhole, like if you're going to open a door, like a beautiful, it was beautiful gothic kind of thing. And it had crystals and greenery coming out of the sides and a bow tie. I know it. I mean, it would be something that Tom Petty would wear. And it was like, because it was like, here's the key to your head, your brain. I know, Glenn, you're just like, what? Because it was funny to me. It was like, here's your third eye. And so I wore that everywhere. It was my thing. It was my treasured thing. And I really got so into it that I wanted to make them, because you could, you know, if you know someone well, you could design the hat according to, like, if somebody likes rabbits, you could go to your glassmaker and put a rabbit on the hat, you know, with a big pin. And I got all into it, and I've never made a hat, but I've always had that in the back of my head about how cool it is to create these crazy hats that are nuts, you know. But, and there's
good
people
for
who
it.
Do it professionally really well.
They do.
But mine had the keyhole, and I still have the keyhole.
Well,
so,
good for
you
it.
Know.
But, I mean, you know, go into that, you know, and you were talking about food. Food and drink is such a massive area. And you can actually go around an area and just visit lots of different food producers and drink producers. I mean, yes, we went to Black Shuck to see how they make gin and vodka. And what else did they do? Oh, schnapps. They do schnapps as well. But I've also got a brewer who does tours for me. You know, and so he can show the process of actually brewing beer, you know, and then I've got another bakery that will show us, you know, the different processes of different types of bakery products, you know, so anything. I mean,
what about tea? I'm drinking a beautiful herbal tea, and I found that we really have to go to people who know tea to get beautiful blends. There's a craft in it, and to get it organic as you can, because half of it's coming out of China too, with lead in it.
Yeah.
So to find really good
I don't know a tea producer here. I know a lot of people who roast their own coffee, and then they blend their own coffee roasts.
Oh, that's important.
But also, I also put on the list about a beekeeper. I mean, we have beekeepers who make their own honey. Well, they don't make the honey; the bees do. But then they make honey products. You know, in
and
fact,
just honey.
My son-in-law, he's actually inherited his dad's hives. So my son-in-law and my granddaughter, who's only five, they go out and sort the bees out, you know. My granddaughter with a 5-year-old's bee suit, you know.
That's
absolutely
cute.
amazing that I didn't even know you could find a child's bee costume, but you can, you know, the one with the great big thing on, because obviously you don't want to get stung. But yeah,
no, that's amazing.
There's so many things. So many things you can do. And
I love it.
I think the thing that I really wanted to get over is the fact that you could add this to your holiday, your vacation. You know, if you're in an area and you like, I don't know, you like woodwork, why not see if there's someone who does woodwork in the area you're visiting? Or if you like pottery, you know, visit a potter and throw some local pots while you're on holiday. You know, them sorts of things, you know.
Yeah, because the other thing is, when you're not on holiday, if you're working, you're working. And a lot of times you miss this even in your own hometown. You know, we were once in the Sequoia region in California. This is years ago before when we started our tour, about 12 years ago. There is a company that went to the hotel and would meet you anywhere and give you a clay making lesson, a pottery lesson right there. Yeah. And then they would take what you created, and you could spin the wheel and everything. Nancy loved it. Oh my. And then they would bake it and send it to you. And so, I mean, we had our own goblet. Of course, Nancy made a goblet, you know.
Of course.
But it was amazing to be able to have these things, you know. And so it was a memorable, you took time out. Remember, we were at a hotel that was an inn, more of like, it wasn't, you know, a typical hotel. It was
No.
beautiful gardens. So we were sitting out on the patio and it was an enjoyable afternoon and it was relaxed. So you could ask questions and enjoy the process without that, you know, get back on the bus.
Quite, quite. And you know, when my group were actually at the distillery, you know, one of the terrible things they had to do was taste everything, you know.
Oh.
And that was awful. They had to taste all these different gins. They had to taste all these different schnapps. And
Oh,
there was,
sad.
what else was there? Oh, there was some mulled gin, so some warm gin with spices in they had to taste. Oh, they hated the tasting, I can tell.
Well, the last time I had slow gin was in Guernsey. I think I told you that I thought, oh, you know, and then they had a cider and a slow gin. I don't know what was going on, but we went, it was Guy Fawkes Night, or I don't know. We went to some village thing and I thought, oh, you know, it was, we tasted this, the slow gin, and I thought I was fine until I stood up and they're
Yes.
like, here, have a cider to wash it all down. Well, then
Oh.
I kind of wobbled my way to the festival, and I can't
Yeah.
remember the festival, but
But
anyway, it was fun.
there were some people on the bus on the way back who were obviously,
Happy.
yeah.
Happy. Well, that's okay, you know.
But that's great to be able to taste all of these different types of gins and things. That they loved it. And it was amazing how many of them said, "Well, actually, I don't drink gin." They did afterwards. They did afterwards. They realized that actually the gin that they'd been drinking was not the same as the gin they were tasting. You know, it was a completely different thing. And you know, they were definitely their heads were turned, so to speak.
Well, you know, but that's the thing, when you have something quality and artisan, it slows you down in the process, whereas like you could go to a bar and drink a beer and it's a typical beer, and then you slug a bunch down. But if you, like, you go to Peggy at the winery, her wines, you just automatically slow down. And you
Yeah.
want to savor the sips because it's, and then when you see where they make it and the work, that's the thing. It's like a musician. People go, oh, how much are you going to pay this musician to do this gig? And I'm looking at them going, do you know how many years of practice went into that one performance? Shut up
Exactly.
about the money. You can't. There's no, there, it's what musicians do and artists do, that joy that you get from that moment that they created it. And if you got to see it, and then it, you see it every day, you're going to see your ornament all the time. Every
Yeah.
time you see that ornament, that memory comes in, you feel warm. The it's a positive, healthy thing. And it keeps giving, like music
Exactly.
keeps giving. You
Yeah.
can't
Yeah.
put a
Yeah.
price tag on a song
No.
because it keeps giving, you know?
And
So
it
that's the
is,
beauty of this.
music is such a memory jogger. It really is. It can transport you right back. And it never ceases to amaze me as well how songs are always in your head and you hear the start of a song and you already know all the words. Now, how does that work?
I don't
Something that
know.
you haven't heard for years, you're suddenly singing along and you know all the words again.
And you
That's
know, the guitar
amazing.
breaks and everything, and people wonder
Yeah.
why you're, you know, walking down the street all weird. You know,
Yeah.
it's all right with me, but it is, and it's the memories and it's the stories. You
Yeah.
know, that is, as a singer, that's the way I could get through a gig, was it, I had to remember the stories that the song was telling,
Yeah.
what was that story? So you didn't, you know, and if you flubbed your words or couldn't remember the exact thing, you knew the story and what to deliver. And that
Yeah.
happened a lot. That was
I
okay
mean,
though.
it's exactly the same as, you know, my Christmas decoration, you know, every year when we get that out and hang it wherever we're going to hang it, I'm going to think, yeah, I remember I actually did that, you know. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's all about memories and it's all about bringing things alive and remembering, you know, it's all well and good going on holiday or vacation. And unless you actually do anything that's memorable, it's just going to go out of your head.
Well,
So
that's
you've
what they
got
say
to do
now.
something.
being transformative, travel,
Yeah.
Transformational, so
It's
that
got to be
it
an
changed
experience.
something.
Yeah, it's got to be an
Something changed
experience.
in you. Yeah, that you grew. It made you think of something. Sometimes people go on holiday. There's that story. Stacy Whittigan, a travel writer, went. She walks the Camino. That
Right.
Camino.
Yeah.
She does
I
that.
know. Yeah.
And then she met a winemaker in New Mexico, and she was on our show talking about New Mexico wines. And the guy was at his retirement. He walked the Camino, which is a good connection to what she does, and she's written books on it. And he saw a farmer sit on his wall, you know, the rock walls were just piles of rock. And he was just
Yeah,
sitting there relaxing with his little walking stick, an elder man. And he sat down to have a break, and they started talking. And the man said, you know, the farmer guy goes, well, all of this is going away. Like, that's it. It's the end of it. And the man's like, what? He goes, well, I've been in this winemaking. They start talking about wine. And next thing you know, he reached over, he ended a jug of wine. But it wasn't the fancy bottles. This is like, he says, you want to try something? He's like, sure. Next. And the other guy was a lawyer who was at that midlife thing of going, I've had enough of this. I've made the money. Turned around. By the time he got home, he opened a winery, and he's still going like 20 something years strong. Him and now his son's in it. And that's from walking on a transformational journey, an experience, and how that changed his life. He found his way from taking that walk and meeting this farmer, and the two of them just sitting there at that retirement. So they both were at this change of life. Like, how does that, you know? And that's when you put yourself out there in the world. You can't go on vacation and not talk to people and get involved, because you never know how it's going to change your life.
No.
Every single day, you never know what's going to happen. And that's a beautiful thing, because you could be going through the worst thing in the world, but you still don't know what the day is in store for you. And sometimes there's always going to be that little glimmering if you put yourself out, you know,
Exactly.
otherwise it just happens.
If you go and talk to the locals, you know, you and talk to your fellow traveling companions, because you know,
Exactly.
there's nothing worse than sitting on a bus with nobody talking to each other. You know, I don't
Oh
know
God, yeah.
why
It's
people
like
don't.
getting in a lift, an elevator, and everybody just stands there, looks at the floor. That's when I start getting the giggles, you know, and I'll say, like, I'll do some kind of weird joke. Just come on, you know.
Do a Peter Sellers, you know.
Oh yeah. Now you're talking our language there for sure. Well, Glenn, I love this. I love this topic. It hits so many things. Number one, shopping. People love to shop, doing it, you know, in this really cool ethical way and meaningful way, memorable way. Also supporting the arts and artisans, people doing the actual skills and crafts, and just creating these beautiful memories. So everyone, Glenn's article is linked in the show notes. And you can also just go to blendradioandtv.com and type in Glenn. You'll find all these articles and past podcasts. And of course, keep up with Glenn at norfolk-tours.co.uk and us at bigblendradio.com. So thank you so much, Glenn. Happy Christmas, and we'll see you in the new year.
Yeah,
Woo!
look forward to it.
And we're all
2024.
younger now. Look how many years we've been doing this. We're so much
I
younger.
know. I
See?
know.
Good for
I've
us.
got a big birthday next year.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, it's not good,
Yeah.
is it?
You know, I'm just wise, you know.
Yeah,
I'm
I
gonna have to
wish
get the
I
knitting needle soon.
was. Me too.
All right. Well,
Right,
listen, you take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us for Big Blend Radio's English Connection show with Glenn Burrows, owner of Norfolk Tours. If you're planning a vacation to England or looking up your family history in England, visit norfolk-tours.co.uk to connect with Glenn. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.